Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Ghost Nobody here, ready to bring you chapter 152 of Radiance, my original Fallout fanfiction. Now, as always, if you can like, share, and subscribe to this wherever you can, either on Spotify, Apple, or any of the podcast network. And if you can leave reviews either at fanfiction.net, archiveofourown.org, or even at my own website, ghostnobody.com, they're always appreciated. And, you know, I enjoy seeing what you guys are thinking and where you're feeling the story should be going. And if you do pop over to ghostnobody.com, why don't you check out Stormrider? You know, if big surly dragoness girls, little human mages, Lamia, elves, orcs, and a whole host of other beings in a magical kingdom spread across a galaxy is your kind of thing, then check it out. And also, while you're at ghostnobody.com, why not check out the Ghostly Link section to pick yourself up a copy of Mortis if you haven't already. Help support me and keep me doing what I love. Bringing original works to you, good people. So, as always, let's get on with the show, shall we? Chapter 152. Let the Feathers Fly. Seriously? Now I look like I'm permanently fucking amazed. Fuller grumbled as he glanced into the mirror on his desk for like the 100th time since Yumi had surprised him by singeing off both of his eyebrows, in revenge for him coming up with stupid call sign names for both her and Letitia. Well, you poked the bear and you got scrammed. What do you expect? Malachi said with a chuckle as he watched the grumpy-looking human looking at his complexion in the mirror again. Well, I didn't expect it to burn my fucking hair off. All I did was make up a stupid name. I didn't expect to get burned for it. Fuller grumbled. Well, you play with fire and all that. Plus, it could have been a lot worse. All she did was remove the hair. It's not like she didn't burn the skin at all, now is it? Quite remarkable display of control over those powers of hers, I must say, Wisp said with a chuckle as she looked at him. You will keep prodding bears with sticks, my love. It's only a matter of time before one took the stick and snapped it, Glory said with a grin. You get more sympathy from a pack of feral ghouls than you lot, I swear to God, Fuller said, crossing his arms and sulking, though it was kind of hard for him to display it without any eyebrows. Well, we finally got word on what happened with the Minutemen, Desdemona said, suddenly appearing in the control room, and the group turned to look at her. Oh, so what is going on? Wisp said, referring to a check call they'd had from the Minutemen HQ, alerting them to an unfolding situation that they might require some assistance with, but details have been kind of sparse. Looks like the Minutemen have finally got themselves a rogue assassin hunting their field officers. Could be the raiders, but the level of sophistication in pulling these hits off, I'm rather inclined to go with either the Enclave or the Institute. Being behind this, it's way too clinical and clean for the raiders, Desdemona said, laying out a file on the desk that showed the two Minutemen officers that had already been killed. Think it's retaliation for them teaming up with us? Wisp said, a voice turning grave, and Desdemona shrugged. Dunno. But as likely as theory as any is right now. They tell me they dispatched the Cossacks and their Valkyrie team to investigate and track down the perpetrator. They also tell me they have a new addition to the Cossacks, one that our friend here might be interested in learning about, Desdemona said, gesturing to Malachi, who turned on his 8 feet to look at her. Me? He asked curiously, and she nodded. Apparently they've got their hands on another Arachnikai. A really big one, called Ebony. Apparently she's some sort of tarantula genus, but she's supposed to be a pretty big girl either way. They said they found her in an underground storage facility that they were tracking down, Desdemona said, and Malachi's eyes went even wider than normal, which was quite an achievement. Another Arachnikai? Out here? He exclaimed, and she nodded. He turned to look at Wisp, who simply smiled at him. Looks like more of your kind have decided to take the plunge of leaving home and venturing out into the great unknown, she said, stroking his yellow leg gently. I hope I get to meet her. It'd be good to learn what's been happening back home since I've been gone, Malachi said eagerly with a distinct note of incitement to his voice. Well, aside from that, and some of our fear agents have finally reported in, also looks like we've got what could be a solid lead on the Institute, or some of their activity at last. This could be the break we've been looking for, as to learning what these fuckers have been up to, Desdemona said. Shall we put a team together? Whispass and Desdemona nodded. I was thinking two of your people and two of mine, he said, and Wisp nodded. Sounds good. Given how restless both Yumi and Letitia have been lately, I think they'd probably be two good candidates for it. Who have you got? Wisp said. Well, I was thinking two of my best heavies, apart from Glory and... So we got Deadeye and Snow. The pair of them could use a workout. And I don't want my people getting stale hanging around here chatting with your guys all the time, you know? Got to keep them on the top of their game, Desdemona said, signalling to Ton to call them all up to control. Once he'd arrived, the four of them took seats as both Des and Wisp outlined the operation. All right, people, listen up. We finally got a hit on what looks to be an Institute Corsa activity. And quite a bit of it, potentially. I highly doubt that if there are this many Corsas running about, it means nothing. Something's happened, something big. We need you to get in, find out what it is and what's going on. But more than that, we believe we have a final lead on what could be an Institute surface base. I can't tell you how important that is. We've been searching for one of these things since the railroad itself was set up. We believe that these hubs are used to ferry captured synths back to the Institutes. If we can break into this place and learn its secrets, then we finally might be able to find a way directly inside the Institute itself. Tom? Desdemona said, looking up, and Tinker Tom nodded, folding up a small boxy device with a load of wires hanging out of it, and a small satellite dish sat folded down on the top. It was about the size of a matchbox. This is the RAT, or Remote Access Terminal. It's going to allow you to break into their network, and more importantly, it'll start sending all of their juicy data directly back to me. Well, like an old hermit with less hair on his head than teeth in his gob, and that's saying something. I'm going to frantically sift through it all until I find the shiny gold nuggets, the access codes or map data, he said. Shouldn't we have a bigger team for this then? Yumi asked, looking at the four of them, and Wisp shook her head. We need to keep this on the low key as possible. The four of you have more than enough firepower between you. Should things go south, especially with you on the team, Yumi, Wisp said. Letitia put her large arm around Yumi's slender shoulders and she looked up at the large avian woman. Don't you worry, sweet thing. I got your back. Ain't no one going to hurt you while I'm here, she said playfully. Yumi chuckled and then flickered a flame into existence in the palm of her hand. Think they need to be a little bit more worried about me, don't you think? She said, and Letitia grinned all over her beak. That's a spirit, she said, squeezing her young shoulder. Snow and Deadeye were male and female heavy. It wasn't hard to see where they got their coded names from. Snow had bright white hair that shone under the light of the vault, which even more obvious as he wore a scarf that covered up most of his face. Though Yumi still guessed him to be in his early 30s, and potentially Asian by the looks of him. Deadeye, meanwhile, was carrying the meanest-looking sniper rifle that Yumi had ever seen. All right, guys, I'm putting Snow in charge of this mission as he's the most senior and most experienced field operative of all of you. Draw gear and rations for an extended stay in the field. Good luck out there, guys, and do remember to stay on comms, Wisp said. As the team headed out towards the stores and quartermasters, Yumi decided to try and get to know the two newcomers a bit. Hey, I'm Yumi. Nice to meet you, she said, offering her hand to Snow first. He looked at it curiously, and then after a moment's hesitation, he took it and shook it, but without ever saying a word, which surprised Yumi and Letitia by the way she lifted a thick, feathery eyebrow. Oh, don't mind him. He's a man of very few words, but trust me when I say there's no one you'd want watching your back more out there. Guy's as silent as a shadow, but as lethal as a desk claw with a hangover. People call me Deadeye, by the way, Deadeye said, offering a hand to the pair of them. I speak only when I have something to say. Otherwise, it's a waste of breath and time, Snow said with a tone that mirrored his name. It was as cold as snow. Fair enough. Care to share the details of what we know about the suspected Institute base with us, then? Yumi said, and Snow shot her a glance and realised that she had robbed him of the mysterious stoicism by invoking his own rules against him. Deadeye seemed to notice this as well and grinned, flicking up her eye patch to put a drop of something into her right eye. And it was only then that Yumi realised that her right eye was completely blood red. Deadeye noticed her looking and grinned at her as she flipped the eye patch back down. My code name didn't come from my shooting, if that's what you're thinking. Got hit in the eye with some sort of chemical during a mission. Made my eye incredibly sensitive to pretty much all forms of light. But did give me perfect night vision out of the deal. They call me Deadeye because it looks fucking dead. Plus, I can shoot the balls off a bloke flying 1,000 yards. So I suppose my shooting does have a little of something to do with it now I come to think about it, she said. The mission is a simple one. We've detected a lot of Corsair activity near an old canning factory down at the Boston docks. Normally, not even raiders go near the place due to the high concentration of Milurks in the area and high likelihood of a queen somewhere along the lines. It's dangerous enough that not even super mutants go there, Snow said coldly. Oh, great, and yet they think the four of us can manage it somehow, Yumi said sarcastically. A smaller team gives us a greater chance of passing by undetected, by either the Corsairs or the local wildlife. A bigger team would only draw attention, Snoke said in a matter-of-fact voice. And besides, with all the firepower we hear you're packing in that body of yours, you should be good on toasting Milurks, or Corsairs, if need be. So, how do these things work, anyway? Deadeye asked, looking at Yumi's hands uncomfortably close. Letitia snapped her beak at Deadeye, making her jump back in alarm and look up at the big avian woman. Don't touch what you are not invited to, she said warningly, and Deadeye held up her hands defensively. Whoa there, big girl. Wasn't going to start grabbing at her, I swear. Fuck pulling shit like that around these parts with all the non-humans wandering around. It's not exactly a smart idea. I very nearly stroked Malachi's leg the other day when I was lost in thought, and I kind of just thinking that his fur looks really soft and fluffy, and before I knew what I was doing, I was kind of just reaching out to touch him, when this deep, gravelly voice goes, I'd keep your hands to yourself if you don't like jealous and angry cloud girls in your head making you masturbate with the spikiest cactus you can find out in the desert. And then I turn around to see this big claw boy, Ven, just standing behind me, leaning over me. Like, how in the name of fuck does something that big move that quiet? Well, anyways, I apologised and told him I was a bit, you know, lost in thought. I didn't mean any harm. It's just when I get curious, I have a nasty habit of touching when I shouldn't. And I don't mean to, I swear I don't, she said hurriedly. Letitia drew herself up and Yumi placed a hand on the big condor's hip, causing it to glance down at her. It's fine, honestly. Letitia here is just very protective of me. And if I'm fair, I am of her too, by the way. So don't go thinking about touching her tail feathers unless you like third-degree burns on your fingertips. But it kind of works like blinking, Yumi said. Huh? You control it with your eye? Deadeye asked in confusion. No, it's both involuntary and a voluntary motion. I can either do it by reflex or by a cognitive decision, much like you do with blinking or breathing, or any muscle movement, really. Just like you would do if you were blinking. It either happens on its own, or you take control and make it happen. Simple as that, Yumi said. Huh, that's pretty cool. I keep hearing about you number people among the Free Peoples, like Seven or Wisp or, well, you know, you. But you're the first one I've actually gotten to, you know, actually meet and have a conversation with. You're definitely not what I expected a super-powered human to be, Deadeye said as they all collected and prepared their gear from the quartermasters, before turning and finally heading off for the vault door. Oh, better or worse? Yumi asked curiously. Better, much better. I don't know, when I found out about you guys at first, I didn't really believe it. I mean, sure, we have mutants and talking deathclaws and all sorts of other things around here, but humans that could do the things that you guys were supposed to be able to? Well, that kind of just blew my mind a little. Then I really kind of got to thinking. I was like, I bet they're a bunch of self-important assholes who think they're better than the rest of us. But everyone's like, no, trust us, Seven. This Seven guy and Wisp are really cool. They really care about the people. Well, I heard about you. I didn't know much about you. And now I meet you. And you're just like everyone said. You guys are really down to earth. Normal people, just like us. Deadeye said with a smile. This is what I thought too. When I first heard about superpowered humans that could do the things you lot can, I was kind of scared by the prospect and what it meant for me and my people. But now here I am completely in love with one of them. Leticia said, giving Yumi's shoulder a squeeze, and Deadeye glanced up at the big condor girl. Oh, so you guys are a thing, eh? She said with a surprised but happy-sounding note to her voice. Yep, this big bundle of claws, feathers and beaks is all mine now, Yumi said, hugging Leticia's large, muscled arm to her body. That's awesome. You know, it's been kind of eye-opening seeing all the different couples and relationships that the Free Peoples introduced us with and brought with them. At first I was like, a human banging at Earthclaw. Nah, are you fucking real? Then I met Gregory and Ven, and it was me that had my mind fucking blown. It's like a fucking adventure with you guys around. You never know what's coming round the corner next. Deadeye said, falling into step behind Snow, as the silent Asian man led the way into the tunnels. The group finally emerged into the bright sunlight, and they all squinted as they looked around to get their bearings. You sound like you're starting to really enjoy having us Free Peoples lot around, Yumi said as Snow took their bearings from his map and then started to lead the way towards the destination down at the docks. Well, yeah. I mean, before you lot came along, I'd never in a million years thought about having a conversation with a Deathclaw. Or, you know, a giant half-spider dude or a Night Stalker or any of these things. But what I thought was just creatures. But now I realise they're just people as much as I am. And now I find myself making friends with these guys and loving every second of it. There's just so much more now to see and learn. It feels like, I don't know, like the world got bigger and smaller all at the same time, Deadeye said, trying hard to put her thoughts and feelings on the matter into words. You have new horizons that you wish to explore them. This is admirable, Snow said in his cold yet matter-of-fact voice from ahead of them. It's a thought that I can appreciate and echo myself, Leticia said, and both Yumi and Deadeye glanced up at her while Snow never took his eyes off the road ahead of them. Really? Deadeye asked, and Leticia nodded. The war between my people and the Brotherhood made me truly hate humans. I thought that all of you were like them, that you all wanted nothing more than to wipe everyone out and everything that didn't look like you or aspire to your ideals of what life should be. But then the Free Peoples came to my city, and I got to see for myself that humans and non-humans can not only work together, but be so much more. I watched these people argue for the freedom of a human soldier captured by our people. They managed to convince our elders to return him to his people, but also then managed to convince the Brotherhood that it was in their best interest to end hostilities. Now here we are working with them, and with the Free Peoples. And more join us all the time like yourselves. It was a beautiful thing to see. And more on a personal note, I get to feel something I was beginning to believe I never would. Love, Leticia said, her voice going quiet and a little shy towards the end as she glanced down at Yumi. Yumi simply smiled, openly reached up to stroke the side of Leticia's head and beak, while causing the large condor girl to close her eyes and lean into the touch while making a soft cooing noise. Oh, God, do you two have to be so fucking precious? Deadeye said with a chuckle, and both Yumi and Leticia both grinned at her and chuckled. Hands off, Deadeye. This big hunk of fluffy, girly goodness is mine. You can find your own fluffy, feathered girlfriend somewhere else, Yumi said with a grin, causing Leticia's feathers to fluff up in embarrassment, while Deadeye simply roared with laughter. Thanks for the advice, but I like boys. Now, if you happen to have any feather-covered, muscle-bound boys lurking around who are willing to shake their tail feathers for a girl with a sexy eye patch, I might be willing to throw some caps your way as a finder's fee, she said, making Yumi roar with laughter while Leticia clacked her beak. Our boys are far more proud than a handful of your caps will be able to buy, she said, with what sounded like a note of annoyance and possibly offence creeping into her voice, at the very idea of Deadeye wanting to buy a Valkyrie boy's time. Whoa, easy there, big girl. It was only a joke. I'd never pay for anyone's time. I got more pride than that. And I hate the idea of it, too. If If I win me a fluffy feather covered boy, it's going to be because of the sexiness of me eye patch and nothing more, Deadeye said with a grin. From up in front of the patrol group, it sounded like Snow snorted, trying to hold in a laugh, or possibly he could have just sneezed. It was hard to tell with the quiet Asian man's demeanour. And it caught all three of the girls' attentions all the same. Now, Snow here is probably in the market for one of your Deathclaw girls. Big girl like that, all claws, scales and teeth. Just right to dominate and break our young stoic Snow here out of his silent but deadly edgelord routine. Bet she'd have him on his back squeaking and writhing in mere seconds, Deadeye said with an evil grin as she nudged Yumi for her to take up the prank. I don't know any Deathclaws, but I'm positive I can find a condor or possibly an eagle genus who'd be up for the challenge. I'm positive they can break through that icy exterior of his and have him cawing like a freshly hatched chick in no time, Leticia said, instantly picking up on the thread of the joke. Not sure we've got any claw girls going spare at the moment. But from what I've heard on the grapevine, we do have a female arachnikai. Big girl too, from what I hear. An honest to God goodness tarantula. So she's going to be a whole lot of spidery girl to love. Bet she could tie him up and have her fun with him. And have him squirming in joy the entire time, Yumi said, making the other two snigger. Well, that was until Snow finally snapped. He spun around on the spot and glared at them daggers. There was a look of murder in his bright blue eyes as he looked for each one of them, and the three girls stopped dead in their tracks. My love life and attractions are none of your concern or business. Keep your ideas and your opinions to yourselves, he snarled before turning away and stomping off in the direction of their objective. The three girls looked at one another and shared a bit of a look of guilt before they all quickly hurried to catch up with him. Look, Snow, sorry, we're just having a laugh is all. You know, we're just trying to break the ice with our new friends here. I obviously didn't mean any of it. It was just a joke, Deadeye said. If my words have caused offence to you, Snow, then I humbly apologise. It was not my intention, Leticia said. If you're going to work with the Free Peoples, you're going to need to mellow out, man, Yumi said, and both the other two looked at her in surprise, and Snow stopped dead in his tracks before turning his eye to her curiously. What did you say? He asked slowly and very deliberately. I said, if you're going to work with the Free Peoples, you're going to need to mellow out. It's all well and good throwing a stomp-off temper tantrum with us three, but try that with a near 600-pound claw or 400-pound super mutant. It's just not going to work. Now, okay, yes, I concede we may have gone a little bit too far with pushing the joke, and if it made you feel uncomfortable, that wasn't my intention. So for that, I do apologise. Also, I'm not saying you don't have the right to get angry if someone says something that offends you, but you really do have to understand something. The world at large doesn't care about your feelings. They only really matter to you and those that care about you. So, you can either give as good as you can get, or you can scream at the sky until you're blue in the face. If you choose the latter, good luck making any friends. You really can't go flying off the handle at little things. Man, it's pointless. You have to realise that some people with us have zero filter, and I do mean zero. Not because they're malicious or nasty. It's just they're not all fully versed in the delicacies of human social norms yet. If there are such a thing these days, that is. Take, for example, Ven. That big claw boy loves winding people up, and he would have said a lot worse to you. In fact, so pretty much would have any of our claw lot. And not because they're being malicious or trying to offend you or being nasty, but simply because they love embarrassing humans and making them blush and pushing some boundaries with them. It's kind of part of who they are. So all I'm saying is ease back a little, man. We're all on the same side here. All we're trying to do is be friends and allies with you, she said, placing her hands on her hips as she stared him down. Snow made a bit of a humph noise and then slowly nodded his head. You, I like. You stand your ground and stand up for your principles and people. This is good, but I do urge you to consider this. Would you have found it so funny if it were I talking about a human girl being dominated and humiliated by one of your large claw boys or by a super mutant? He asked. Probably, yeah, because we do have girls in our ranks who like that sort of thing. Though I do push back on the humiliated point. While a lot of non-humans can be rather dominant in their ways, not a single one of them would ever try to humiliate the person they're with. They work fucking hard to convince them to take a chance on them. They'd never dare try doing some sort of shit like that, which is going to get their chosen human to leave their ass alone in the dust again. But, yeah, I get where you're going with the whole equality thing and no double standards thing. But you will note that not one of us ever said the words against your will now, did we? Not a single one of us would ever make a joke about that shit, no. On that, you have my word. Because while quite a few of the few free peoples are survivors of that sort of things, and worse, both male and female, the joke was in the consensual context, nothing more. If a single non-human tried that shit, well, in the free peoples, they'd be out there faster than they could wag their scaly tail or fluffy wings or whatever the fuck they had. We take that shit rather seriously. Just ask Jewel the next time you're in the vault. She got incredibly lucky that Zixie did a deep dive on her mind and showed the truth behind her actions, and her pure remorse for them, or she'd have been up against the ire of the entire of Raymond's lot. And that's something that worries even me, Yumi said, and Sloane nodded slowly and approvingly. Good. You have passed my test. You stand up for your people and their principles, and you do not back down when someone challenges them for fear of offending them. That's a good trait, and how it should be, in my opinion. Just because someone takes offence at something does not mean the thing itself is offensive. Merely the one of individual has taken offence to it, and does not like it. The will of the one does not outweigh the will of the many. So thank you, Yumi, for proving what I hope to be true. And I'm also glad that you too believe in this as I do, Snow said, giving her a respectful bow, before turning on his heels and continuing on his way again. Yumi glanced at both Deadeye and Letitia curiously, and both of them simply just shrugged. Now look at me, girl. You've personally just won the Got Snow to Say More Than Five Fucking Words award. So far, you're the only recipient I know of, Deadeye said in what had to be amazement. The three girls kind of just stood there and shrugged together, then eventually fell back in step with the curious yet mysterious Asian man as he led the way. But Yumi couldn't help but find herself with a new kind of found respect for him. He was willing to acknowledge his own faults, while standing up to others he believed were in the wrong and calling it out. She had to admit, that was kind of a rare quality among many people these days. Though, to be fair, she kind of figured it was actually a trait rather universally shared among pretty much all of the free peoples. She began to wonder if that was one of the many reasons she liked being part of the group so much. The ability to speak your mind and be challenged on both your thoughts and ideals in an open and easy way. So, is fire the only thing you can control, or do you have any other little tricks up those sleeves of yours? Deadeye asked suddenly, as they all walked out, and out of the corner of her eye, Yumi caught the brief glance of Snow in her direction. Seems he was interested in the answer to that question as well. No, I can pretty much control any element to some degree or another. For me, it's a simple matter of tapping into the structure of the thing I want to control and then bending it to my will. Yumi said, causing lightning to arc between her hands as she spoke. Deadeye's single exposed eye went wide as she saw the bolts jumping back and forth. Whoa, shit, that's awesome. Wait, does that mean you can take control of the elements within a person's body as well, you know, like blood and stuff? She asked with a sudden worried note to her voice. Now, that's where things get odd. No, I can't. I can set you on fire. I can heat you up till your blood boils. I can hit you with lightning or even wind. Hell, I could drown you in a ball of water you can't escape from, which I pulled out of the air. But when it comes to the elements that are actually contained within a person's body, I can't seem to establish a connection to them. It's like, because the person has ownership over them, they won't recognise my authority to them. Strange, really. Yumi said, making the water vapour in the air condense into a small spinning ball that floated directly between her hands. Strange. I wonder why that is, Deadeye asked curiously as she watched the undulating ball of water spinning on its axis between Yumi's hands, like a transparent little planet between the hands of a mighty goddess. She touched the surface of the ball and it rippled before settling to become still again as it span. No idea. It's something I've wondered about for a rather long time. But it's something I've kind of just come to accept. It's not really like a need to control the elements of a person's body to achieve my ends. And if I'm truly honest, it actually makes me feel a little bit better about myself. Amy said, causing the ball of water to evaporate into a cloud of steam that simply blew away on the wind. Oh? Deadeye asked curiously as she watched Yumi turn her attentions to the dirt now, making a small clump of it rise up from the ground and separate out into a series of little darts that span around one another like they were dancing. It's bad enough knowing that I have this level of control over the world around me, when everyone else can barely feel the world around them, let alone interact with it. Can you imagine how people would look at me if they knew that I could simply turn them inside out or turn their bones into powder on nothing more than a whim? Yumi said, throwing the earth darts with such velocity that they punched clean through a near car door like metal bullets. Honestly, I don't think things would actually be all that different, Leticia said, and Yumi glanced up at the big beautiful condor woman with a sceptical look. Oh, and how do you figure that then? She asked. Well, think about Seven and Wisp. From what I hear, Seven can crush someone to the size of a soda can with nothing more than a thought on the matter. And Wisp can fly her sparkly ass out of that synthetic body of hers and into a person's head. And they either end up joyriding around in their skull or taking full control of them. But you don't see anyone looking at them like they're monsters or bad people now, do you? Though, truthfully, I haven't actually met Seven yet, but the way people speak about him is all I really need to know about the guy. But either way, they don't think they're bad people now because of what they can do. Because they are good people and everyone knows it. They help people and they go out of their way to do so. I think in time, people won't see you any different to them, Leticia said confidently as she placed her powerful arm around Yumi's shoulders again. Yumi smiled and that nodded. You really do have a way of making a girl feel good about herself, you know? Yumi said, smiling up at Leticia, who ruffled her head feathers like a fluffy mohawk for a moment, and then smiled back at her, winking one of her large golden eyes as she did. Oh, you have no idea how good I can make a pretty girl feel. But I'm hoping you will soon enough, she said, making Yumi bark a laugh and blush at the same time. I'd say get a fucking room, you two, but A, that's probably what you want to happen, and B, then I've got to put up with Snow's disapproving silent stares on how the mission is now running late. So, yeah, please don't do that, Deadeye said, making both Yumi and Leticia laugh. I believe I have ideas on how we best use our abilities to rapidly accomplish our mission, after which they may do as they please, as it's no concern of mine how they choose to spend their free time together, Snow said, making all three of them glance at him. Oh, what have you got in mind, then? Yumi asked, pushing the stoic Asian man to give further details. But once again, he just climbed back up, stating that it would become obvious when the time came, which was less than helpful. It took them a full 2 days to make it all the way down to the facility down at the docks. That was their target. The ground was pretty rough going, and they had to make a lot of detours due to collapsed bridges, flooded roads, impassable blockages. But finally, they arrived at their target facility. Each one of them was wearing their personal comm system now that allowed them to stay in communication with both each other and with HQ if need be. And it had been encrypted by Tinker Tom himself, so the chance of anyone managing to crack through the transmissions wasn't just slim, it was infinitesimally small. Snow had devised a plan to put out each of the team's strengths to good use, to maximise their chance of not only success, but making a silent and bloodless operation, as well as avoiding the local fauna where available. Deadeye was currently camped out at the top of a rather tall water tower nearby that gave an overview of the cannon factory. Meanwhile, Leticia was circling higher overhead, putting those large wings and incredible eyes of hers to good use, as she was painting a picture of the movement they were seeing on the ground below them. Both Snow and Yumi were going to be acting as the infiltration team. It was not only their job to breach the factory, but to find the network and install the rat onto any interstate network ports that they found. Preferably one where it wouldn't be discovered by accident and lead to the whole thing being compromised. The plan was simply to observe the coming and going throughout the day, so they could have a good idea of the numbers and makeup of those they saw in the factory. Then, once night fell, both Snow and Yumi would make their approach. So, they were going to be using the intel they gathered throughout the day to plan said approach. The biggest problem, other than the snippets of intel gathered by Deadeye in her powerful scope, the factory's internals were basically going to be a blank slate to them. So, they were going to have to adapt somewhat on the fly, if they were going to successfully breach this place. To this end, Snow had brought along a couple of prototype stealth boys that Tinker Tom had modified to give them a much longer life. And not only were they rechargeable from the fusion cores that he'd rigged up to power the things, they were not as infallible as they would have liked, as coursers were known to be able to pick out operatives wearing these things. So, they still were going to have to rely on their wits and abilities to see them through. To say this was going to be tricky was a bit of an understatement. So that was chapter 152, ladies and gentlemen. But will Yumi and her team be able to breach the cannon factory? Will they find the Institute base they're looking for? And will the coursers find them? Or will the Myolurks get to them? Going to be only one way to find out the answer to those questions, and so many more. Going to have to tune in next time. So until next time, this is Ghost Nobody signing off and saying, I'll see you all next time.